And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Doing the Work podcast. As tonight, we discuss some new activity that includes some NIL action that includes some of our women's basketball team. So tonight, Jeff and I, welcome Coach Marlowe, is joined by a very special guest. And we have a special edition this week for you of the Doing Work podcast. So as part of the Back Home Network, though, we are sponsored by Home Field Apparel. And did you know that among all the t-shirts on the Back Home, the Home Field Apparel website they have available, there's one specific to Allie Patberg, showing off all of her passion. And in light of her just getting drafted by Indiana and all of the things that she's done for us, we'd absolutely love for you to go out to homefieldapparel.com, search for Allie and support her and buy one of her t-shirts. So you can also find a lot of other college teams out there or have other people in your life that do. Home Field Apparel is the place for you. Their product line extends to more than 120 schools, so we're sure that you'll find something you or your loved ones will like. And if it is your first time using going to Home Field Apparel, you can go and use our promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, for 15% off your entire first order. Again, that promo code is HOME, H-O-M-E, and the website is homefieldapparel.com. So, as mentioned, though, Jeff and I are joined today by our special guest. We are joined today by Tyler Harris. Tyler is the managing director for the Hoosiers for Good, NIL, and they partner with charitable organizations and student athletes. He was just named the managing director in March of 2022, and that was after he spent 4 years as the Indiana Associate Athletic Director. At Indiana, he also held roles of the Associate Director of Compliance and the assistant athletic director. And prior to IOU, Tyler was out in my neck of the woods and worked in compliance at the Iowa State. And he also did an internship for NCAA. So he has lots of great experiences and a lot of great things he's bringing to Hoosiers for Good. And most of you probably have seen by now, they just announced they partnered with 14 Indiana student athletes from various sports and they paired them with various charities. So we're here to talk to Tyler today. So Tyler, welcome. It's good to talk to you and thanks for joining our show.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tyler, we thought maybe if you want to just kick us off here and start with an overview of Hoosiers for Good, kind of your mission and the history, even the brief that you have won so far.
Yeah, you know, it's been a busy month and a half since I started. There's been a lot of activity. Most recently, even after our announcement, we received 501c3 status, and so we're tax deductible. Donations are tax deductible, and so we're a nonprofit, and we're focused on supporting Indiana charities and helping community-minded student athletes becoming leaders of tomorrow. And the way we're doing that is we're entering into NIL agreements with student athletes who do have a passion and a platform to add value to our charitable partners. And so that's a brief rundown of what we do. Like you mentioned, we just announced a class of 14 on April 7th, and hopefully we'll have some more here in the fall.
Awesome. Great. All right. Well, Jeff, do you want to kick us off with the first question?
Yeah. And Tyler, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you. And so first of all, what exactly is a collective? What makes you different from other collectives other than concentrating on charities? For example, and I don't know how much you know about, but for example, the Hoosier Hysterics have a collective. So what makes Hoosiers for Good? First of all, what is a collective for our listeners and what makes you different from some of the others?
Yeah, you know, a collective was a term that's just since originated since NIL. And really the idea behind a collective is where people donate money to an organization and then in turn that organization partners with student athletes at X school and enters into NIL agreements with them. So there's a variety of collectives, trusts, whatever you want to call them out there. And I would say, as of March 8th, the day of our announcement, we were different than a lot of people. We had a charitable focus and a true charitable focus. And since then, I think I've seen five or six with a charitable focus come about. There's one, it's been recently announced with a third party associated with Ohio State, same with Clemson, same with Notre Dame. I think there's one associated with Kentucky. And so all of those have at least publicly been announced following our announcement. And so, if you had asked me that question on March 8th, I would have said, we're one of the first to have a charitable focus. And really, it's my belief that the IRS, approving us as a 501c3 organization really validates kind of our mission and what we're doing. Because we really want to add value to our charitable partners. And quite frankly, we wouldn't do this if we can't. And so, one thing I like using tangible examples, and again, we're a month and a half into this. And so I've got one right now. And so since we're talking about women's basketball, I thought it'd be great to talk about McKenzie and Grace's tweet or social media post following the announcement mentioning Indiana Wish, that they're partnering with them. And since then, last Wednesday, Indiana Wish reached out to me and said that Instagram and Facebook social media reach has went up 150% and Twitter reach has went up 500% just following Grace and McKenzie's tweet. And so that's a social media post. And that shows how much exposure some of these student athletes can bring to our charitable partners.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, that's fantastic. So, Jeff, that kind of was a good segue to our next question we had for you, Tyler. So one of the differences we know is the charitable portion, but I think the other thing is that you do have other sports. So I know, for example, the Hoosier Hysterics have very much said they're mainly concentrating on men's basketball. They dabble in maybe women's basketball a little bit, but very much so not other sports. So how did you decide to branch into other sports, and how do you kind of decide then which players you're going to partner with from those other sports, not considered one of the big two, meaning men's basketball or football?
Yeah, Pete Yonkman, who's the president of Cook, and he's the president of our board. He has similar values as I do, and so does Fred. And when they presented this opportunity to me, mentioning that they wanted this to be truly broad based, you think about Fred's time as AD. And 24 sports, one team comes to mind, right? And this endeavor is really no different. We want to be broad-based. We want to include as many student athletes as we can. And just to demonstrate that, one, our first announcement, I think, shows that. But we're also going to be releasing a first-of-its-kind charitable incubator program. And that is a program that is really designed for student athletes at IU that haven't found their voice yet, but are really passionate about a specific charitable cause. And with that program, we could enter into an NIL agreement and help them find their voice. And also, add awareness to their charitable organization that they're passionate about. And so I guess, yes, a follow up on the back end of that, in terms of the student athletes and which ones we select, I think it's, some of it's obvious, right? Some of it is their name recognition, do they have social media influence? Can their partnership with us bring national exposure to what we're doing and to our charitable partners? Some of them are obvious metrics, but there's other things that I look at too. And really it's student athlete driven. When I talk to the student athletes, I really ask what their interests are. And thankfully, I had a sneak peek into that when I was, the head of compliance at IU. I knew them personally and their interests off the court, for example. And so both of those factors combined, helped us decide, our first class and probably will drive our decision making moving forward as well.
So, Tyler, kind of follow up on that. And I did catch you on Alex Bozich with Podcast on the Brink. You mentioned coming out with, I believe you're hoping to have another group announced later in the fall. So some sports that aren't represented right now, is the hope to try and get some of those sports included with the next group of kids?
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. It's certainly the hope to include more sports, but also could be student athletes from the same sports as well. And so really we want to try to give as many opportunities as we can. A lot of it's going to be driven on our, how many partnerships we have at that point with our charitable organizations. But I envision around 30 student athletes at a year and outside of the charitable incubator program. And hopefully at some point within the next year and a half, we'll encompass a student athlete from every sport.
That's great. That's great. So, you talked a lot about the player selection. Maybe on the flip side of that, how do you select charities that you're going to partner with? And then as a kind of a follow-up, how do you then pair the student athlete with those specific charities?
Yeah. As of right now, you know, a lot of the charitable organizations are reaching out to us. And that's been great because you see the excitement and the exposure that they know this can bring to their organization. When I started March 7th, we had 5 charitable organizations on board already. Ever since I came on, we've had 3 more, and I've had conversations with probably 3 or 4 this week. And so that list is going to continue to grow. But a lot of it is driven by them seeing what we're doing and wanting to be a part of it. In terms of the student athletes, I think it goes back to, again, a lot of their interests. You know, a lot of conversations that I have with student athletes, they mentioned that they would do this endeavor for free. And while that was a nice sentiment, you know, they're finally getting rights to their name, image, and likeness. And so we don't want to take advantage of that. We want to provide them opportunities. But outside of that, they do have certain interests. A lot of them have said they want to be involved in an organization that helps kids. And so it's certainly a puzzle, but at least in terms of selection, I try to match them up with their interests as much as possible, but also, you guys probably know student athlete schedules are very busy with academics and athletics. You know, it's busy. And so as much as possible, it just made it easier for me to be able to partner student athletes from the same sport together. So I did that as well. And I think it's worked out, you know, so far.
And kind of follow up with that, Tyler, this question came from Phil in our community. Are the players selected for the NIL and Hoosiers for Good as a result of the good works they may already be doing that they weren't getting paid for prior? Or do you recruit players to raise the profile of the charity?
You know, I think it's both. You know, certainly there was no shortage of student athletes, even pre-NIL, getting involved in charitable work, whether it be as part of their team or them individually. And so, you know, it's in part of that, right? You know, it shows there's an interest. But there's also student athletes that just maybe never had the opportunity. And so, you know, we'll certainly look at a variety of factors. But at the end of the day, it's what student athletes can raise awareness for our charitable partners, can really add value, but also genuinely care of using their NIL to do good. And an added benefit to, you know, them using their NIL in this way is their brand is forever going to be associated with charitable organizations. And that's just another added benefit to what we're doing.
And Kathy, can I ask a quick follow-up here, Tyler? Just when exactly, I mean, because obviously if we had a high profile recruit in football, men's basketball, women's basketball, when would you be able to approach them as far as say, hey, here's some opportunities?
Right. That's a really good question.
Yeah. You know, we're really specific, one, because of my background, and two, wanting to be just completely transparent. We're only focused on student athletes that are currently enrolled at IU. And so, you know, once they're enrolled at IU, at that point, we could approach them and engage on, you know, potential NIL endeavors through Hoosiers for Good. But we won't do it a second before, just to keep the environment, you know, as clean as possible.
Perfect. That's awesome. So maybe if you don't mind, Jeff, I'll go ahead and this is, I think, a good question from David in our chat here. So David was wondering if you know or are able to say what percentage of kind of your donations go to the athlete or the charity or stay within the 501 C3 organization.
Yeah. So our collective is set up to where, all, you know, the donations we receive are either going to the athletes or for operating costs. You know, I'm the sole employee, so there's not a lot of operating costs. But we do want to get to a point where we're giving student athletes, you know, apparel to wear at charitable organization events. And so there'll be some of those costs and, you know, just some, you know, typical costs associated with business. But for the most part, you know, all of the donations will be going to student athletes in this endeavor. You know, and from a charitable side, it's free marketing for them, you know, and so, you know, that the goal being that partnering a student athlete with them will increase awareness and subsequently increase donations for that charitable organization.
Right. Yeah. So really the way the charity is getting paid is not via directly from Hoosiers for Good, but they're really via the publicity and the work that the student athlete is doing on their behalf. So you mentioned already the increase in tweets that and followers rather that the that some of them have already gotten. So in you know, de facto then what follows is hopefully not just followers, but also people that contribute as well, donations. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Certainly increased awareness, which hopefully turns into increased donations. And so there's no cost to our charitable partners in this endeavor. Really it's truly bringing awareness to their organization through student athletes and NIL.
Yeah. Sounds good.
And Tyler, I think we'll kind of probably ask this question a few different ways throughout the rest of this segment. Yeah, there's a perception among a lot of the old school IU fans and kind of old school college athletic fans that this is pay for play and it's, you know, and such. So one of the questions I had, having listened to you on the podcast on the Brink episode, you mentioned that there's a contract. Kids have to make so many appearances. They have to do so many tweets. And so how would they go about it? Maybe you don't want to say, but I guess my first thing popped in my head are, so are they kind of paid in installments or they get paid at the end of the contract? I just kind of was curious about that. And again, if you can't say, I understand that, but that was one of the first things when I heard you make that comment about kind of a contract basis.
Yeah. You know, I'm certainly going to give a more of a longer winded answer to that question. Just to explain to the audience, you know, we're going to require student athletes to do work. You know, this is not an endeavor just to put money into the pockets of student athletes. Again, frankly, we wouldn't do this if we can't add value to our charitable partners. And so, you know, how it'll work is student athletes will enter into an agreement with them. And the process that leads up to that is quite honestly like an interview, right? Making sure there's a fit, making sure that they genuinely care and they're going to add value. And then within the agreement, what I call the deliverables is there's going to be a certain number of appearances, around five, and the large portion of those appearances will be with the beneficiary charity. And when I say appearances, it's certainly not showing up, you know, for 5 minutes, waving, smiling, and leaving. Like I said, they're going to work. There's going to be a time commitment, and it also can run the gamut of things, whether it be a celebrity judge for an event that a charity is hosting, whether it be, you know, signing autographs for an hour and taking pictures for an hour and then participating, you know, so certainly a time commitment. And then in terms of other deliverables, there's going to be between 12 and 14 social media posts. You know, the majority of those will be promoting an upcoming appearance or on the back end, you know, posting something that just talks about their experience and what they learned and things like that. And so that's the majority of the, you know, social media posts, but there also will be a floating four or five, you know, throughout the term of the agreement that is really just designed to bring additional awareness to the charitable partner. And you have to strike a balance because you certainly don't want the tweets to come off or social media posts to come off disingenuous. And so there's a strategic amount, and every one of them is going to be genuine. We're going to require them to think. And then every student athlete is going to be required to indicate in their social media bio that they're a Hoosiers for Good athlete. And so those are for the most part of the deliverables. In terms of the compensation arrangements and how that's structured is there'll be a certain number after the first deliverable first deliverable is completed, they'll receive a certain number. And then on the back end, they'll receive a certain number at the completion of the agreement when they completed all requirements within there.
Awesome. So yes, kind of as a follow-up, one of the questions I just thought of, Tyler, about on average, and I know this is just your first class with the 14 student athletes that you have, but on average, how long is the term of the relationship that they're kind of, I guess, contracted now to have with that charity?
Yeah, I would say generally, you know, there's certain exceptions. Generally, they're year-long commitments. And so they'll be pretty much 365 days from the day they signed. And throughout that, again, knowing and speaking to this earlier, student athletes' times, you know, time demands are certainly challenging. And so we're definitely not going to tie them to a specific event on a specific date, because that's just not fair.
Right.
But there are expectations that you will meet the requirements of the agreement by the time that the agreement ends.
Yep.
So, and I kind of jump to the next one here, Kathy. We don't have to, you know, if you want to go back to one,
yeah,
kind of out order here a little bit, because that kind of goes to what I was wondering about as well. So say a donor, say Jeff Marlowe played tennis at IU, all right? And I care about the IU tennis program.
I want to see that, by the way, Jeff.
I actually did play some tennis, just not in college. But anyway, so could a donor contribute to, say, I want to donate? And I think this is one of the fears that we have, that many people have, is, you know, you hear these stories about certain people out there that are donating money to these NIL collectives or funding, whether it, you know, I won't say any names, but I'm sure we all can think of somebody we've seen in the news that owns teams and things like that out there. That, so could I say, could I come to you and go, Tyler, I'll give you guys $20,000, but I want it to go to an IU tennis athlete. Is it designed for that? Or would you kind of be, you know, would that be something you kind of have to go back to your board and be like, is this what we want to do?
Yeah. We certainly thought that through. And where we landed was we're just not comfortable with somebody coming to us and saying, here's X amount of dollars, but we want it to go to X, just this student athlete. We're not comfortable with that. But if they want to donate and say, hey, we'd really like the tennis team to benefit from this, you know, as long as that's it, we would certainly be okay with that, as long as there's the understanding that, you know, we're going to be the ones selecting the student athletes and their charitable partners. And so we've just drawn the line in the sand that if you're wanted to go to a specific student athlete, then, you know, we're probably not the place you want to go to donate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I appreciate that.
Yeah. That was the question I was going to go to anyway, Jeff. So it was great. Kind of on the flip side though, what if they came to you and said, not necessarily a specific athlete or even a sport, but a charity, would you entertain that? Or you really want to try to do the pairing on your own?
You're talking about donating to a specific charity, right? Or just
yeah. So like if Kathy came to you and I said, you know, I really want this to go to charity ABC, would you help coordinate that? Or would you say, well, we'll do our best, but we can't guarantee anything kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I haven't really thought too much in depth about that. You know, my initial response was, if you want to, you know, directly donate to a specific charity, you know, certainly do so. But we would also encourage them to ask or have me reach out to that charity to see if they want to be involved in this process. Mm-hmm. And so I don't ever foresee us getting to the point where we're excluding any charitable organization in the state that wants to be a part of this. Because, you know, frankly, that would be going yeah, against what we're trying to do. And so that would probably be my suggestion is, you know, let's get the charitable partner on board, you know, with us, as opposed to giving money to a specific charity, because you can do that on your own anyways.
Right. Absolutely.
So yeah. Tyler, are you I missed it right at the beginning. I was hopping on 501(c)(3). Are you officially designated as a 501(c)(3) now?
Three.
Yeah. As of Monday, I think the news broke Monday. We've been approved for 501(c)(3) status.
Okay. So that brings me kind of, I'll phrase the question a little differently. Listening to you on the podcast on the brain, you thought that would take a fairly long mm-hmm. time. And this has been pretty quick.
I put too much faith in our legal counsel.
I wonder who that is.
No, Fred's awesome. Taft does a great job. You know, quite honestly, you know, the standard turnaround time was 9-ish months. And yeah, and so I think everybody was super surprised when we got that as quickly as we did. But I just think it validates what we're doing. I think it was an easy decision because it's truly good in what we're doing. There's the charitable component that we really care about and that we want to raise awareness for. And so I just think it's validation. It was maybe an easy decision for them.
Yeah. Cool. So, okay. So maybe moving to something that was from your past that probably is really going to be beneficial, and that's just understanding compliance and the rules and those types of things. And so our understanding is like the state of Indiana specifically has no policies on NIL. Are there other states that do have specific rules? And if so, do you have any examples of how maybe those states are different from Indiana and how you might navigate them? And maybe for you, it's not, it doesn't matter, because I think you might be concentrating on only Indiana charities, but just kind of curious your thoughts on how the compliance might work for this.
Yeah, so you're correct that Indiana does not have a state law related to name, image, and likeness. And so Indiana's applicable regulatory authority is the NCA and the NCA's interim NIL policy. But there are states that do, and forgive me, I'm not gonna remember the exact number, but yeah, there's somewhere around 30 to 35 states that do have NIL laws or executive orders. And I think you go, Florida, Kentucky, I think Kentucky may have an executive order. Ohio has an executive order. California, I think New Jersey, but the challenging thing is all those state laws either speak to different things or do not speak on certain things. And so that's where the challenge is, particularly from a compliance standpoint, is if a state and their state law doesn't speak on institutional involvement, that is assumed okay. Whereas it's not as clear, with the NCA, and if that's okay, there's language that seems to suggest you probably should stay away from it, but doesn't explicitly say no. And so I'm getting in the weeds, but that's where it becomes challenging, and why a national law would make sense is just from a competitive equity standpoint.
Sure. Yeah. And compliance equals getting in the weeds, though, doesn't it? Pick out your one last question. I know Tyler's want to be respectful. He's willing, got him for a few more minutes. So,
well, I guess I kind of asked this one as a two-part question, Tyler. Hopefully you can give me a shorter answer since we're stuck on time. You worked in compliance. What's the NCAA waiting on? And B, I think there's this, what I hear in some of the chats on the podcast and different things that we do here in the Back Home Network is that somehow there's rule breaking going on. Well, if there are no rules, then nobody's breaking any rules, correct?
That's a good question. There's certainly an interim policy that's specifically lays out prohibitions. Student athletes can't receive compensation for essentially not doing anything, right? There's got to be work performed for what they're receiving. It can't be used. NIL compensation can't be used as an inducement. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of others. And so from an NCA perspective, and I really enjoy the NCA. I work there. There's a lot of great people there. The legal environment certainly makes it very challenging for them right now. And the other thing is there's probably a lot of confusion that if a state has a state law and a school is breaking their own state law, who gets involved? Is it the state? Is it the NCA? And so there's a lot of challenges with this current environment. Hopefully the NCA will do something because it'll quickly get out of control if it hasn't already.
Right. Absolutely. Cool. So Tyler, I know you have a hard stop here in just a couple of minutes, so I want to be definitely respectful of your time. So first of all, again, thanks for coming on the show with us today. It's been a great pleasure having you on and learning more about Hoosiers for Good. Jeff and I have a whole lot more questions as well that we had already written out beforehand. So we're very much interested in the project for sure. And so what maybe we could do is down the road, as you continue to mature as an organization and start to talk about maybe your second class, maybe we can have you back on the show, see what kind of new questions we can come up with, and maybe have some of these follow up if that's okay.
Yeah, certainly. I'd love to hop back on. We're certainly going to have more exciting news as this continues to evolve. And we've been here for a month and a half, and I think we've got some pretty exciting news so far. And hopefully that will continue here in the near future.
And yeah. Tyler, just real quick, I want to give you an opportunity. You probably said it at the beginning, but what's the website for people who want to go and check out the program?
Yeah. So check out HoosiersForGood.org. And you can read all about us. We'll be doing some updates to our website, specifically in the charitable incubator program section as we continue to roll that out. And then you can also reach out to me. I'm happy to speak to anybody about what we're doing. Tyler.Harris@HoosiersForGood.org. Feel free to reach out at any point. Again, happy to talk to anybody about Hoosiers for Good and ways to get involved and just generally if you're interested in learning more.
Yeah. Thanks. And they can follow you on Twitter too, right? At Hoosiers for Good, with the number 4, not spelled out. Are those probably between the website, your email, and then your Twitter, are those the best place for people to go to learn more or to reach out with questions?
Yeah, I will say, you know, from an update standpoint, you know, we'll certainly update our social media pages. So Hoosiers for Good, with the 4 on Twitter, and then Hoosiers for Good, FOR, I believe, on Instagram. And so check those out. We'll certainly be providing updates as we continue to progress.
Okay. One last question for you. Is your website a place where people, if they wanted to just make a donation, is that a place they're able to do that?
Yes. So you can make a donation. You know, I think there's a donate link in the top right hand corner of our website, and it'll say we've updated recently with the 501c3 status. And so, just to make it clear, it's tax deductible. And if you don't want to donate on the website, again, you have my email address. Feel free to reach out to me. If there's really pointed questions you want to ask to learn more before you donate, certainly do not hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition, I know we already asked Tyler lots of questions, but again, for our listeners, if you haven't heard the interview that Tyler did with Alec Bozich over on Podcasts on the Brink, I'd highly encourage you to go and listen to that as well. There's a lot more information as well that Jeff and I didn't cover with Tyler. And of course, again, that website is Hoosiers for FOR. good.org, where you can definitely learn more and make donations as well. But Tyler, any last parting comments or questions or anything you'd like to impart for our audience before we let you go?
No, I don't think so. I you know, really just give our website a look. Feel free to reach out. Again, we want to be as transparent as possible in this endeavor. You know, we're really about being broad-based. We want to include a lot of student athletes. But we're going to do it the Hoosier way. And that's what's important to us. And the Hoosier way is following the rules and making sure we're encompassing as many student athletes as possible, but creating better people in the process. Mm-hmm. And so feel free to reach out to learn more. And I'm excited to hop back on here in the near future with you guys.
Yeah.
And Tyler, I just want to say thank you for coming on and kudos to you and the entire board and the group that got this pulled together. I really think this is a neat way to take advantage of the NIL rules and as you've talked about on this episode. So just if you can, for us here at the Back Home Network, Kathy, myself, please let the group, the board of directors know how excited we are about the program and appreciate what you're doing for our Hoosier athletes.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. I really look forward to hopping on here soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks again, Tyler. Thanks to everyone listening. Jeff, I 100% echo what you said. The more I started reading on your website, and like I said, I mentioned the interview you already did with Alex, I was very excited to have you coming on tonight because I think what you guys are doing are just really great. I mean, it's great from the charity perspective, but it's also great because you're teaching student athletes about community service and helping them as well. So I think it's great. So thank you so much. And thanks to everyone for listening. I'll wrap us up. Jeff and I will be back again with more shows this off season, maybe again with Tyler. Hopefully we can figure out schedule wise. But until then, everyone, thanks for listening. Keep your elbow in, your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
See you, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.